We've
That's what we
done
gotta do.
this duo a couple times, I think. Right? At least for bonus.
Too many times, I think, is what the feedback was. But yeah. Dude, I was actually stoked. Thanks, Chris. I was actually stoked. The comments from last week were super funny, like weighing in on who has the best like Tweak Talks alias, like the Orr name, Marcus Orr and all that stuff.
Marcus Orr's the
I kinda cleaned up at the polls, man, is what I gotta say. I was surprised. I thought I'd be like dead last. But it's a good one. They're all good, is what I'll say. So that's fun. How you doing, Gab, by the way? We'll bring it back to reality.
I'm good. Honestly, not too much going on. I did stream Comic Palooza, the top eight. That was a fun watch. I think the way I would sum up that bracket was it was very classic NA Smash Ultimate vibes. You had Mars in there, Mudace, Light, Leo, Luis. So in terms of like character pool and results, it felt like very classic Ultimate for at least from a North American perspective. And congrats to Shiny Mark for winning, and also congrats to Peepnut for a fantastic performance as well. It was a fun watch, and it was very, very familiar as a longtime Ultimate player like myself.
It was actually a really great tweet. I meant to have it pulled up. Give me one sec. Where it compared, like the overlay was this top eight, and I forget what other top eight it was, but the overlay was like
Oh, very
the same
similar.
exact characters and like round lineups. And obviously Light was the Fox player and Mars was the Zero Suit and Leo was the Joker. But then, you know, it was like Kamehameha in the original screenshot, and then but obviously now Peepnut, which is fantastic. You know, and a couple people have been swapped out. Characters were all the same though, and the buildup from like night one, or I guess night two into night three, whatever, top 128, whatever, into top eight, it was fantastic. Like I love that first night. It was so fun to watch. Obviously, biases included. I had a great time watching Mars and Light perform. Especially Mars, like he's just keeping up this title of being like the tough veteran to get through as these, you know, Anen, who they've been winning tournaments, one of the best players in the country right now, didn't get top eight, and that was because of the boys from New England, you know, Mars and Light holding it down. Light having a really tough game one against Anen, then doing what he does where like games just don't really seem to matter to him. If he gets washed or if he wins, he just does his thing. And he adapts pretty well too. But Mars, like that thing that he does where he just plays the player like. And the fact that people are saying like ZSS might beat Steve, I'm like, damn, this dude single-handedly is like changing the meta with his character, like just making people think about it in a different way, which I think is so cool because he only goes to a couple tournaments like a quarter or whatever he does. So I had a blast Saturday night watching them play, of course. And the top eight, it being all basically all what we consider vanilla characters, Joker's like basically in there, in my opinion, at this point. Obviously, DLC obviously has some mechanics,
Yeah,
but
he's closer to that at, like
he is.
especially just to the average viewer base. It just seems like they group him in with like something like Zero Suit, so
He's like familiar too in the story. It's usually Leo who they're
he's
thinking
been
about as
around long
well.
enough too. He's like
Yeah.
an early DLC character, so
Enough storylines with Leo, and we're
yeah.
familiar enough with him, and like no one like hates him anymore, which is so funny to think about because a couple of years ago he was the guy everyone hated. And yeah, it was really cool to see that. And then the final bracket happened, and man, it was a swing and a miss from me, pal, is what I'll say about it. Like it was pretty good, but dang, it did not meet expectations in my opinion. Like for In terms of raw entertainment, like I really like all those players and everything. Like there were great storylines, and it just like I don't know. Obviously, I selfishly wish, you know, Light and Mars did better just because I've known him forever and all that stuff. But it is really cool to see Shiny Mark do well because the thing we always talk about with him, and I think the thing that really helped him out in this tournament was the format and his ability to stay in winners because he went into top eight winner side, right? And he was able to keep that momentum going. And make sure that he didn't lose steam going into the final day. So it's like he made it all the way through. He was able to keep his head on straight and then rest up the night before. And then he's like, if I stay in winners and I win a couple sets, that's it. You know what I'm saying? So for me and him, it's always been like his endurance. We've talked about that so much where it's like he plays this really long game and how long can he keep it up for? And breaking up the action the way that it was and him staying in winners for most of the bracket was like, that was real. I think it helped him out a lot. And beating Mars is insane because Mars always did really well against ESAM. Like, he's good at that matchup for sure. But Shiny Mark came in today, the final day, with a whole new game plan and a whole new, like, I don't know. He just did really well.
Yeah, I like what you had to say about Shiny Mark. I actually mentioned a couple things on my stream. Something that seemed to happen to Shiny Mark in a lot of brackets is he does great, of course. Like, most of the time, he does fantastic. But he does seem to run out of steam pretty often. And his brackets tend to end, like, in a way where it's noticeable that he's gassed out, I think. So dropping winner's finals to Peebnut 3-0 and then winning grand finals 6-0 says a lot. And I think that's, like, just been a big story, like, the last couple months as well, with, like, a lot of these up-and-coming players that aren't necessarily, like, veterans to the Ultimate Tournament scene, getting their first couple big wins. You know, you got Paul winning CEO. Anand's been winning literally everything. We saw Omega do really, really well, like, kind of break, like, a hurdle. But then all those players are also, like, getting those big wins and then also, like, fumbling in some other brackets. And I think we've just seen this with, like, every player that eventually becomes, like, a household name. And they're just reaching that point where they're going to be breaking hurdle after hurdle. And it's, like, the hills and valleys are very noticeable with these players right now. One of the most common ones we talked about on the podcast in recent memories, like, Spargo going back and forth with, like, winning to, like, a dramatic underperformance, blah, blah, blah. These players are doing very similar things, and it's going to balance out just because they're doing so well, and it's very clear that they're figuring it out. Last thing, I did not ask how you're doing, Haz. How are you doing?
Mix. The ultimate mix. Yeah, what's going on? I'm good, dude. Everything's been good. I'm super busy, but, you know, life is good, and we keep moving. Some great Smash over the weekend. I actually stayed up, too, and watched Sumabato, which was great. Had a lot of fun. Obviously, really happy to see Hurt back in competing. You know, Ashima went on a pretty good run. I had a good time overall. Smash feels like, you know, Ultimate Brackets feel like they're in a good place. I had a great time watching Comic Palooza or whatever. Yeah, Comic Palooza. Make sure I say that right. I don't know why I struggle with that, but I just do.
I think a lot of people did, yeah.
It's weird, yeah. I don't know why. I shouldn't, but I do. But yeah, it's good. I got a couple of events coming up, lined up. I'm excited for summer. And yeah, man, I don't know. Life's been kind of boring right now. Like, good boring, though. You know what I mean? Like, content. Yeah. Not like, wow, I'm bored and, like, you know, got to do something. So yeah, everything's good. Thanks, man. Yeah, it's not bad. Yeah, but Comic Palooza too. And I love, you know, we talked about Shiny Mark already. Peeb is the other story, obviously, in this bracket. 3-0-ing Leo, working his way through winners, two grands. It's just like,
his first win on Light.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
like, well, he was just pretty damn dominant.
He's ready, man.
I love Peebnut, and I love Mega Man. Like,
same.
It's a great combo.
Same, dude. And I think too. Well, he beat Light. He beat him twice, didn't he? Because he went through winners. It was Shiny Mark who beat Light and losers. That's right. But he 3-0'd him. It's like, because sometimes too, like, you're talking about these players who are now really starting to hit these strides of hitting top eights and whatever, and how there are downfalls to that. I love what you said with that, because I think you put a target on your back a little bit more too when you become a player of that caliber, and more people look. It's not like, oh, this player beats me, it's a big upset, and, you know, I don't need to, maybe I need to think about that X amount or something. Like, oh, this guy does well in his region, or maybe he could beat me. But now it's like, this dude, you know, one CEO or whatever, one MomoCon or whatever event. So I'm really going to try super hard to beat them, because now they're worth points, and it's more than just defending myself. There's like a reward that goes into that in itself as well. So it's interesting to find players who are hitting this consistency as well. And this top eight felt, again, it felt really great on paper, but damn, the end game tactics are out, bro. Off stage for like 20 seconds at a time. Shiny Mark.
Yeah.
He's trying to win, bro. And I respect him for it. But yeah, it does, you know, that was a 6-0 and it was not fast. That was a super long 6-0 at the end there. But I'm not like sitting here saying like, damn, Shiny Mark, you need to run at him more, like play more recklessly. No, man, that's the game. That's always, you know, That's what Smash boils down to a lot, and it's a really effective strategy. And he had just lost to Peepnut earlier in the bracket. He lost 3-1, I think. Double check that. Yep. And then to bounce back and make it a 6-0 is really good. In your opinion, you know, as professional player, former professional player, perhaps, Peepnut, what are the takeaways for Peepnut from this? Because he obviously won the first set, but then you get 6-0'd like that in grands. What do you walk away? Obviously, aside from the obvious, like studying VODs and like thinking about the matchup more, the player matchup more, like what do you take away from that? Like, what do you do going forward?
Yeah, for this set in particular, there's a lot to say. Because in winners, a majority of their set was on Battlefield. And the last game was like Hollow. So what I was saying while I was streaming was, I know why Shiny Mark is sticking to Battlefield, especially with like how much time you can stall with the lead. And it gets to a point where it's like a guaranteed victory, right? With the lead where you're going under the stage. But I was like, if you're losing over and over, like, I would like to see a switch. And I thought the Hollow Bastion switch was okay, but I don't know the bans or anything, but there probably could have been something better. And then in Grands, all six games are on Battlefield. And now I'm just like, all right, I think both of these players are just crazy. Like, I think they have a game plan and they're sticking to it. And I think that's fine. I think it's really important to pick a hill to die on and to not hesitate. Because a lot of the time, there's not a right or wrong answer. And if you overthink it, you end up not picking anything at all, and you regret it. But it's something I was thinking about after the fact, before this podcast, where I really wanted to find a chance to talk about this concept. Like, if you're in this scenario, do you focus on sticking to your game plan? Do you switch up the scenery just because you're losing? Like, I really wanted to ask, obviously it's just you and me, and I would like to hear your opinion, of course, but I just really wanted to ask y'all what you think about that scenario, especially when it's a grand finals, which is a little different because there can be two sets. Like, how do you find that balance between your own game plan and like trying to mess up theirs? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. You know, as a professional player myself, I have a lot of thoughts and opinions on this matter. And, you know, I think the number one thing you said that really sticks out is there is no true right answer. What I'll say is that there are times where you need to learn from what had happened and what's going on. And I think a lot of people are going to be quick to say, like, oh, damn, he definitely should have mixed it up. He lost 6-0. It's like, yeah, but you have to take it like one game at a time. You know, you can't look at 6-0 after the fact and be like, dang, I probably, you know, man, after game one, I should have changed my stage or whatever. I think that this is a great learning experience or ability for Peeve to take something better away in the future. As it comes to what actually should he have done, clearly the answer is something different than what he did do, right? Like, after the fact, you could think that. But in the moment, I think it's so hard to sit there and think, like,
if you won winners, right? Winners finals.
Totally. Like, well, yeah. And it's like, do you blame the stage? Like, some players view it that way. Like, I got to get off the stage, or it's not the stage. Like, I could just play better or do something better. And even as I form the question to you, there are so many variables that fall into that. It's like, do you get better at playing against Shiny Mark himself and his style and the way he plays the game? Is it a Pikachu thing on top of that? Is it both? Is it the stage too? Like, obviously he's not going to change characters or do anything, but I think there's like a little bit of both that he could do better. And I think Shiny Mark really showed off, like, this was, I don't want to say a surprise tactic. We've all known Shiny Mark to be a player that plays the marathon game. But under the stage for like 20 seconds at a time.
It felt extra efficient and deliberate. Like, exactly. At least the point where he had a lead with a specific amount of time, and the whole chat on at least my stream was like, that's it. And it was every time. There was no surprise.
Shiny Mark crying in his chair when it hit that time.
Like, as soon as it hit a minute and there's like a 30% difference.
Yeah.
And I talked about it, really reminded me of my loss to Sonics at Kulon, where even at a deficit, it's like he knew if he just got the right hit with a certain amount of time left, kind of like what Lima was doing to Light as well, where it's just a very efficient, specific window in the match, and they just have it down to a science.
There are clearly players where they feel, and it's interesting that it's two leaders of meta-relevant characters in Pikachu and Bayonetta, who feel like in some matchups and against some players, I'm full sending off stage, and like that's just what I got to do, and it's, I feel like, the most effective strategy against a lot of more specifically characters than players. But I mean, Lima did it specifically against Cola and Light, obviously, are the two that I really think of. And those guys play a pretty similar style and pretty similar character thing, where if they go off stage and miss, Bayonetta's reversal potential there is just crazy. So it's like combination risk reward and tournament style play, and just getting to this point where I feel like it's a confidence thing that they're saying too, where they feel like their play on stage, like standard Smash Bros, is so good and optimized in terms of neutral and their combo game, all that stuff, that they're like, the only thing left to explore, it's like the human race. It's like, the only thing left to explore is space. You know what I mean? Let's go out of the box, right? And their characters are, there's no surprise that it's those two as well. They're some of the most acrobatic characters that can do stuff like that and keep themselves off stage for a long time, and reversal too. Just a place you don't want to be off stage against either of them, especially as those specific characters. But then there's just characters who can't do a lot about it without committing. Like Mega Man doesn't have like a, I feel like, unless he commits really hard, doesn't have something super hard he can hit Pikachu with, off maybe a dare, like if you get lucky or something, but there's too many variables. It's too, and Shiny Mark proved that, how consistent and how good it can be coming into those six games were just, they were brutal, man.
He stuck to like, it.
Yep. Well, that's the thing.
Losses, he just went right back. Like,
and Peeps a smart guy, and he thinks about the game a lot, and he obviously his character a lot. He's one of the best Mega Man on the planet, if not the best one right now. And it's just, it's tough. Like, what do you do? And it sucks because, well, I was excited either way because, like, I've been rooting for both these guys for a while, and it's nice to see the hard work pay off for both of them, but especially Shiny Mark, because he's come close so many times to having that big tournament, you know, huge breakout or whatever, or these big wins on top of a tournament win, right? Like, not an event he was necessarily expected to win, like one that was going to be really competitive. And him going down to losers is scary too, because we talk about the endurance, we talk about all that stuff. But he didn't look, it was great. His execution, he even SD'd against Light. I remember that, but he still won. Like, he still won. I don't remember if he won that game.
Yeah, SD'd against P-Gun winners. And
yeah.
Then, you know, bounce back.
It's weird, all these these comparisons between Bayonetta and Pikachu, because how often we say that about Bayo players too, where it's, oh, they SD'd. It's like, yeah, but sometimes, like, overall, like, throughout a set, if you play, you know, how many stocks do you get throughout? You get 15 stocks if you play five games. You throw one of them away, you still got a pretty decent chance of winning if the rest of your stocks are that high quality. It's pretty cool. Well, okay, objectively, it's not cool to watch. Like, it's just not. It's but you got to respect the strategy is what I'm saying. Like,
yeah.
It's not, you know, it's the Smash foul baiting, you know what I'm saying? Like offstage merchant type deal, like timing. Like, it's not fun to watch, but is it an effective strategy? Hell yeah, and I respect that a lot. So grats to Shiny Mark. That was cool to watch. Dormigi won another tournament. Sumabato with Hurt back in attendance, who he lost to Raru. He got 3-0'd, and then he 3-0'd him back in losers, which I thought was good to see. Just great to see Hurt play. I think he's just a really welcome, not just player, or well-liked player, but his personality is great. You know that, obviously. He's a very fun guy, and he's easy to root for, is what I'd say.
And he is up there. He might even be the best player in the world.
Yep.
In a lot of ways, so I'm glad he's back. That Shiny Mark Peepnut, like, those few sets really got me thinking about, like, decision making, like, thought processes, like, in between games, depending on winning or losing. Like, you can go down so many different paths with how you should go about that, and I think those two playing those few sets in particular, it showed, like, what can work, what cannot work in, like, both, in different ways. Like, picking Battlefield and losing over and over and then just winning on it six times in a row. Like, I'm just thinking to myself, I'm like, I don't think I would have done that. Like, I don't think I would have.
No.
Like, they're sticking to a game plan, and then there's, like, what Shiny Mark did. Like, that is sticking to it.
I think, too, for him, it's a little easier, right? Because he won. Once he went back there, the game one in Grands is the one that was, like, a little more, like, you know what I mean? Like, running it back. But then he won one. And I think it's easy to, like, the dice is hot. Let's keep going. And his strategy, obviously, is really good. Going under the stage. It's a smaller stage, all that stuff. Like, you can just do it easily.
Yeah.
Platforms for an additional recovery angle and all that. It makes a lot of sense. For me, it's more like, why did Peeps saying, again, this is hindsight, yes, though, because when you're locked into the bracket again, there are too many variables, right? Oh, I could do it on the stage, or maybe call it stubbornness. It has to be a little stubborn, right? Because the options are right in front of you, that, like, you could change anything at any time.
It's just, I also have a little bit of extra passion towards this because I've talked about this specific thing with Shiny Mark a few times. Like, we played at Genesis, and we played, I think our set was 3-0, and all of our games were on FD, which is already just strange. Like, you don't see that often, right? A tournament set that's on FD the whole time. Like, it's just not common. And he's at, and we're talking about the set after the fact, and, like, that's, like, the most important thing I mentioned to him. I'm like, bro, what was that? Like, why are we on FD every game? And then a couple other tournaments happened, and we're talking to each other again. It's not even about us playing against each other. He lost some set, and I'm like, bro, why are you on blah, blah, blah every game? So, like, with Shiny Mark specifically, I've noticed this. So maybe I'm, like, harsher on him because of his winner's final set with Peebnut, because I've had this conversation with him. But at the same time, I'm impressed that he was able to win 6-0 and just, like, stick to it. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
Trusting yourself is really important. So, and the timeout strategy is interesting, because I'm sure we've talked about it as with Mars, how we'd always theorize what it would look like if he was willing to do it once in a while with Zero Suit, right? But you can kind of see the difference between something like Bayo and Pikachu versus Zero Suit trying to time you out. If Zero Suit's trying to time you out, it's not like infinite air time plus like damage output while they're doing it.
Right.
Like, if Zero Suit wants to get a proper amount of damage, she just can't be fully committed to the timeout. She has to be in the middle all the time, I think. Whereas Pikachu can optimize damage while still playing with full intention to timeout. Same with Sonic and Bayo. And that difference is so key. Like, think about Wolf trying to time out, and think about all the damage he's leaving off the table if he's fully committed to timing you out. Like, Zero Suit is closer to Wolf in that aspect, where if they want to play defensive and win, it has to be like something that's always teetering back and forth. That's one of the value, like, that's some of the value of these characters, where the timeout can be plan A, it can be plan B, and they're still fucking you up the whole time while they're, like, balancing that. Whereas if Zero Suit or Wolf wants to time you out, they have to decide, like, pretty quickly into the match. Hopefully that makes sense.
Totally does, and I think we actually saw that on display with Mars against Anan, to be honest with you, because it was like he was doing a lot of air camping, a lot of jumping, high jumping between the platforms, not interacting at all, and then getting, you know, Zare back air. Like, that's what you get, you know what I mean? Or maybe a raw aerial or an up air into maybe another up air, and that's it. But then the risk is kind of crazy. And honestly, shout out to Anan, because there was one down air I saw Anan do that was amazing. And I'll never give Steve down air any credit ever. Like, that move, you know what I mean? Like, it's really good is what I'll say. But this one down air, Mars was air camping, high jumping back and forth, and Anan did an anticipation double jump down air to call out Mars's jump. And I was like, damn, I can't believe I'm about this. I was like actually messaging Marcus at that moment. And I was like, damn, that was a really nice down air. And as I hit enter, Marcus said that down air though. Like at the same time, I was like, damn, what the hell? It was like the same wavelength. I was like, that was really nice. And, but yes, I agree with you where in Zero Suit's thing too is not really hanging out off stage. Cause like you said, the reversal potential that Pikachu and Bayo get, whether it's hitting you off stage, yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, Zero Suit can't really do that, but she is an incredible keep away character, of course. And I'm glad to see, and again, not my favorite strategy in the world, but I do appreciate people playing for the W, but Mars going for that is very different than what he normally does. That's not how he normally plays. Very bait and punishy, very punish the player for doing, you know, bad habits and all that stuff, which still applied. But being able to just like kind of take a step back and pump the brakes a little bit more was incredibly valuable because I've seen my guy lose these sets, you know what I mean? Where it's like, dang, he dominated game one or like he's got the right game plan. And then he just like stops doing it and like just starts getting hit or jumping into things or whatever. But he's taking his airs, he's taking his back airs, like just kind of chilling. And it's like as good as ZSS might be in this matchup, it still feels like hard work for her when it comes to at least finding the kill. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just feels kind of tough still. Just, I don't know. Steve's just that guy at the end of the day. But I thought it was a good and fun set, to be honest with you. I was definitely nervous at the end as well. Like, that, I don't know. Game got kind of crazy, but it's all good. Yeah. It's all good.
It's just interesting to, like, really make that separation And I talked about that a lot on my stream too, where like their timeout strategy is so strong, like some of these characters, that it can be put on the back burner throughout the match and they can just bring it back when they need it. Like it's really crazy how good they are as characters. And it's not like the timeout is required to win. Because if you think about Sonic and Brawl, I would argue that if you want to truly win consistently, the timeout is like required with Sonic and Brawl.
Right.
Whereas in the future, he got so much stronger as a character that it's match by match. He could just win outright if he just destroys you. So.
But he still has those tools and they're still really strong. Before, it's like that's all he had. Like he had to do it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that's, yeah, for sure.
But Steve, it's the same. It's like, it's dynamic throughout the match. They take what you give them, and it's very punishing when they are making the right decisions. But yeah, there are a decent amount of events coming up. The summer should be very interesting.
Are you going to anything? Not to put you on the spot, but to put you on the spot?
I'll probably go to the things that make sense and would be expected. B and I are still talking about it. We might go to something like Collision just to hang out. We might go to something like Supernova, like things you would expect that are like driving range and close to home. Yeah. Sweet. We'll see. Still figuring it out. A few interesting things happened while we were gone. Donkey Kong Direct.
Oh, okay. It's like, where are we going with this? Yep.
We're actually going to talk about a couple Donkey Kong things.
We are. I'm more excited about the second one, but go. I know you gotta cover your Donkey Kong quota here. So go off.
I streamed it in the morning, and I'm gonna try to like not be biased. But was that not like one of the craziest directs ever?
No, but I do respect what you're saying. And what I will say is not to be counter, because I know you're really into it. And I wasn't as into it, but watching the direct, I was like, this looks like a good fucking game. Like, this looks like a good game.
It wouldn't
like,
stop.
Exactly. And it was, you know, obviously I know I'm more plugged into it than I think most people because of you, for better or for worse. But it looks... You know, which is great to see because so many people had that initial hesitation around the new redesign for DK. But I think the more people see of it, the more they trust the idea that it's subterranean and they go underground instead of like going across a continent or up like you usually do in a game, I think is super interesting and cool. And I'm sure you have a million things to say about that. But I just think it just looks like a good game, which is like that's the most important thing to me. Like everything else in between, like. It's awesome, man. And obviously, you know, it's been a really long time since
we've gotten emotional just looking at stuff like this. Like
it's amazing, dude. Yeah.
It's a dream come true. Like if there's like a dream video game brought into reality, like it doesn't get much closer than this for me. It just doesn't. I won't go too crazy on all the theories and blah, blah, blah.
You have to turn into a stream for that.
Yes. Right? I was going to say, I do. Always end up doing that on my stream every time I stream. I don't know how, but it always ends up being about something like this, whether it's Switch 2 or Donkey Kong or both. But yeah, it was just 17 minutes of nonstop, like, oh, this is like it. Like, they think this is like their Switch 2 system seller for like a single player experience. Like, they're convinced that they can pull it off with DK on the box instead of Mario. It was. And I hope it does. I hope it's like it reaches the standard that they wanted to, because Odyssey sold like what, like 30 million plus?
Yeah. And well,
I would love for DK to do this. It would be amazing.
It's very possible. And the thing I'll say is that they're putting the Donkey Kong franchise in a position to succeed because it is the first major game. So it's more of a risk, technically. It's still Donkey Kong. Like, let's be real for a second. You know, it's not Mario or Zelda, but it's like right there. It's the first Donkey Kong game in a long time. They're making it a premiere like opener for their new system that sold a billion copies of hardware. And now this is the game. If you want to play the new Switch game, it's Mario Kart, obviously. But then for, like you said, the single player game, it's going to be this, which is amazing because they're putting it in a position to succeed because they know, yeah, like, if this doesn't do well or for whatever X, Y, and Z reasons, which I'm sure it will, they can always release a Mario and know it's going to bang. Or same with, yeah, Zelda. You know what I mean? Like, so I think it's a good position for every piece to be in right now. And you technically did kind of get Mario already through Kart. So I don't think you want to stack those two things because I feel like they kind of, maybe it doesn't matter at all. Maybe I'm just, you know, not sure, yeah, what I'm talking about. Maybe it doesn't matter because Mario Kart's its own thing and Mario is its own thing. But to me, it's really good. And the fact that the game just, I can't say it enough. And I came into this with zero expectations. I know we're not the same in that way, but I came in zero expectations for this game. Just like, huh, wonder what it looks like. That'll be neat. Mm-hmm. I was like, holy shit, this looks really, it just looks fun, which is the best. I don't care what IP it is. The fact that it just looks fun is really good.
Yeah. So, yeah. Something I really like how you said, like, they're setting it up for success. And the main point I want to get across is, like you said, the system started off really strong. I don't know the specifics, but I have been hearing that the Switch 2 is doing very well. And secondly, Mario Kart being the launch title is obviously very sensible, right? It was the best-selling Switch 1 game for Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. So whatever big game you release after Mario Kart World is being set up for success, like you said, right? And they're minimizing the risk, even though it looks risky. And I think you can argue a couple other things for IPs that are very successful right now that you expect to see on the Switch 2. Like 3D Mario, right? That's a big question for a lot of Nintendo fans right now is, if this game is this crazy and they're putting this much effort into it, when is Mario? It's already been a very substantial amount of time since a 3D Mario. How much longer will it be if this 3D Donkey Kong game is taking up this slot? And I think they're also setting up people to be surprised when the 3D Mario comes sooner than they're expecting. Because now that people think it's off the table, they can show you something as inevitable as 3D Mario, and it will actually be a surprise.
Well, and what? Okay, ultimate mix here. What's going on, Charles or Chuck? What's happening? Didn't see that one coming, did you? How's it
what
going?
Up, what up?
Just to catch you
recording today, so
that's, yeah, just to catch you
Hawaii
up.
Time. What's up?
We covered Comic Palooza. Shouts to Shiny Mark. Tournament Endurance, all that good stuff. We talked about Hurt coming back, Doramigi's W, Sumabato a little bit, and now we're talking about Donkey Kong once again, which is great. So
all right, I came in for the good part. Got it.
No, yes.
I was going to say, so Gav, on that point, because it is interesting to think about, like, they're changing so much about Donkey Kong, right? Like, they're changing, you know, the way he looks, bringing Pauline back in, whatever. They're doing all this stuff. What does this mean for the other franchises? Because that was a big thing with the Switch 1, too, because Breath of the Wild took a huge leap, breaking the mold from traditional adventure or RPG shit. We could see a whole different... I think they're...
In every way.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's not our first rodeo. Like, B and I, like, we can't help, like... Every time there's a big IP change in the Switch 2, it's like Smash is going to be crazy. Like, we can't help but like start getting that ball rolling. And the point I'm making for Mario, where it's getting off of people's radar, so when it happens, it'll be even more of a surprise, even though of course it's going to happen. It's the same thing for Smash. Putting Sakurai's name on the Kirby Air Ride thing naturally is going to make people question when and where for Smash, so that when it does happen, it's more of a surprise. And these IPs are so inevitable. It's like Mario, Smash, there's Animal Crossing. Like, you got to expect them. But when you get something that throws you off, I think it's just like, it's a win-win all the time for Nintendo. They get to do something with an IP like Donkey Kong that's a little different. It looks like a risk, but they're managing it really well. And then the already existing expected stuff will also be out in due time. So I don't know. I think they're doing a good job so far, and I hope it does well, Donkey Kong, because it's really nice to view this not only as like a dream come true game, but like a new beginning. Like, this is just the start, which is like ridiculous to think of. But I mean, look at the effort. Like, the fact that we could have a handful of DK games in the next 5 years is like, wow, that's a crazy sentence to say, but it's pretty reasonable.
Totally. I mean, the turnaround time on Breath of the Wild 2 felt really fast after Breath of the Wild. Once you have the bones in there, right? Once everything's created and you learn what people liked or didn't like. And, you know, Breath of the Wild 1 probably in general more well-liked or better liked than Breath of the Wild 2. But it was still really cool to see them come back to back. And now it's like the door, not just Mario, not just Zelda, not just DK. What does this shit mean for Smash?
Why not?
We're all gonna be playing with the roller controls, right? No, hold on, we're gonna be using the mouse. Well, no scope 360,
it has to be featured somehow, right?
Speaking of,
my local to my local Kazuya player that uses mouse controls, you know,
two questions. Here's one I came up with before we started the show and started talking about all this. There are two main things I would like to talk about today for the rest of the time. The first one is there's two things. So one, there was a trailer that dropped yesterday that was so fire. It got us very interested in this version of Smash, which is incredibly cool. And the second one is, and I want to throw this out there so you guys can think about it while we're talking about the trailer we watched. Thinking about where we are in Ultimate and how, you know, the next Smash is inevitable at some point. Who are the players that should be on everybody's radar as like taking off like a rocket when Smash next gen comes out? Who comes to your mind immediately? Who do you think is like a sleeper pick? All that stuff. But think about that. Let that cook in the background a little bit while we and let us know in the comments below too, who you think, because I have a couple of answers. And I'll let you guys think about it too. But in terms of shit, what was the first one? That shit ain't working.
I mean, I know the players I have in mind.
All right, let's just do the players then. All right, let's do it. Let's do it. You ready?
Yes. So,
Charles, you got some or no?
Yeah.
Let's do one veteran, one newcomer to Ultimate, and one sleeper pick who can kind of be in the middle.
Newcomer to Ultimate.
Yeah,
newcomer
to Ultimate
was the main thing I had in mind because it feels like something more reasonable to be like, they're new right now, expect them to become a veteran, blah, blah, blah.
Yes. Pipeline
for newcomers, I always think of Zomba. I think he's going to be very dominant in the new game, just like how he's dominant in this game as like someone that's newer to Ultimate. Shattuck always comes to mind too. Finishing up school and all that stuff, like
timing's perfect. Yep.
Yeah, I think the timing is good. A veteran, myself.
I like it.
In terms of a sleeper pick,
someone that, which isn't like, oh, no one knows this player, it's just, whoa, I wouldn't have thought of that, you know.
Sleeper pick, you might have to come back to me on that.
All right, you got it. Charles, you want to go or you want me to go? Do you need more time? I have my answers.
Oh, you can go. I'm still thinking a little bit.
So the rookie,
do we all want to have different answers?
That'd be good, but it's not, okay, you know, okay. I think we'll all kind of agree. The rookie I have my eye on, the first one that comes to mind is easy. It's Dormigi for sure. Like, just in terms of like doing really well recently, like aside from the obvious Alcola, like is someone to watch, of course, and Mia, if we're going to talk about EU. I think Crepesele fits in that conversation well too. Plays a lot, is going to pick a good character, is getting better at Ultimate 2. Those are like the younger players or the rookies, as we call them, that I think will do well and kind of transition into becoming veterans at some point. But there's a lot, you know, I think that we could say. I don't know if Ashimo falls into that category, but of course I'd pick him. I don't know if he's like X Factor type guy or like
how much people are you picking, bro? What the heck?
Well, him, he like, to me, he's more of like, I wouldn't really count. I don't know why. Maybe this is weird, but I don't count him as like a rookie anymore. Yeah, he's like, to me, it's like X Factor. Like, he's going to do really well. For the veterans, like, at the gate, obviously Gavin comes to mind. He labs and gets obsessed with this stuff. Like, it's a good bet. But since you already said you cut from a similar cloth than you would think, but it's Paris. Like, Light, when he fiends. Like, when he fiends for something, he fucking fiends, bro. Like, yeah, when he's on a Pokemon Go kick, we all know, because he calls us and talks to us about it for 40 minutes, which we love, and it's great. But he fiends, and he's obviously very talented and quick at picking up games too, like just the gamer. Him, and if Void makes the return, that's an easy W, which he will, obviously, and he'll do really well in the first year or so of New Smash, in my opinion. And sleeper pick, someone you might not think of, but, you know, I just know, and I thought of it. I think of a not even just one player, but a state, and it's Georgia. And I just thought of like Omega. Like, you might not think Omega number one like right away, but I think Omega could do really well in the next Smash game. I'm gonna say Jazzo, of course, obviously. If Riddles comes back and play, which I'm sure he will, like, you know, I gotta rep the fighting game guys in Georgia. I love watching them all play. So, and they all work really hard. And I think out of the three of them, I don't want to say one has the hardest work ethic or not, but I think Jazzo like puts in so much time and work. Like, I think his is like kind of an X factor though, because like if the fighting game characters are good, then he'll be good, and if they're not, then it might be trouble for him. But yeah, those would be like my kind of, you know, interesting picks that I'll throw out there for sure.
I like the Dormiki one a lot.
Yeah, he's like, I think that's a layup, to be honest with you. Kind of
getting a couple sets in with him in Japan is like, I could tell like he's just on fire, you know what I mean? Like, he wants to win bad.
He, and the interesting thing too that I think that this next Smash game will have that the old ones didn't is Japan will really have a strong, not that they didn't before, but it's like the strongest on the planet right now. Their infrastructure and ability to play and grind and want to get better and be the number one region on the planet. Yeah, it's never so been stronger cool. than it was in Ultimate. So they're like kind of a whole X factor to me in their own way, or something unique to think about that we wouldn't have been talking about at the beginning of Ultimate. You know, like, oh, you know, we know that there's going to be some really good players from Japan, of course, and they're a good region. But now it's like they're the fucking region now. Like, we got to, what's that going to look like? It's so interesting to think about. Charles, I'm sorry I said Light and Void. I realized after the fact that those are obviously good choices.
Jesus
for you as
fucking
well.
Christ.
So my fault, man. My
set
fault.
You up for failure.
My fault. And I said Gavin, too. You're really screwed.
Yeah.
I think there's a couple of easy ones that we still haven't said yet, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I got some. So,
All right, let's hear it.
When I'm going to start, and I'm going to continue the conversation by going with just kind of thinking about things regionally. I think Ultimate, before Ultimate, it was pretty much North America slash mainly America that had all of the big tournaments. There was a huge, I don't want to say like monopoly, but if you essentially wanted to be globally ranked, you had to come to America. So it is very, I wouldn't say it's opposite of that. It almost feels like the pendulum has fully swung the other direction in terms of like, obviously Japan's the strongest region right now. That's never happened in Smash history. Also, EU has grown quite a bit. So there is, we always talk about the game being global, and we really do mean it, because it wasn't really that spread even before, but I would say it's a lot more spread out in terms of where you can travel and where you can find success and where you can find really good players and grind. I think for America, the strongest region is Tri-State, and or just like Northeast in general. And I think it'll be the same for the next Smash game. So I'm looking for players in that area when I'm thinking about American players. So, you know, veterans that I've seen do this before is going to be obviously Gavin. I think Gavin's just really strong at the beginning of a Smash game. The way he thinks about it, he's very forward thinking, so very unique. And I think when, especially in the beginning of the game, unique play and people that are pioneers are very strong. Obviously, like players like Void are going to be strong, but like Void and Mars will be strong when I'm thinking about veterans. But it also, there's like the contact or content X factor, which is like, that's why I would put a lot of my money on Gavin, is because I know Gavin's going to prioritize competing over content, but there's going to be other veterans that prioritize content over competing. So that's something also you have to think about. These younger players, or these players that are way more dedicated towards competition specifically. So it's like Gavin, Paris are players that usually prioritize competition over content, right? Whereas like Void and Mars are the opposite. So you guys got to think about that kind of stuff when it comes to veterans, right? And then when I think about the rookies or the players that came up through Ultimate, I'm just going to keep thinking about Tri-State or Japan, right? So it's like, when I think about Tri-State, it's like Zomba, Syrup automatically come to mind as the up and coming Tri-State players. You know,
damn
what I mean?
It, I meant then, to say Syrup. Shit, that was such a good one.
Shit, you said so many other players. Goddamn, leave some for me. And then
that's why I did it. You're right. My bad.
Yeah. And then for me, when I'm thinking about Japan for like players that came up during Ultimate, I'm automatically thinking of Mia. I think Mia and Hurt are like, to me, the most impressive Japanese players.
Something about Mia screams
try hard
Like,
he plays a lot of characters, bro. A lot of characters. Maybe you only see the Game Watch in Bracket or in Steve, but holy shit.
It might come as a surprise to some people just how, like the general thought process is about, like, certain characters and players, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mia...
He has a blueprint, I think. Just, like, his mindset, the way he plays, all the characters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it'll be difficult for him.
It beats the fake chain allegations. You know, you got it out, you're checking. Oh, he's good. Mia's
also my only thing, it's weird because there's a lot of players that are good at Ultimate now, and not to bring this topic into being like, oh, well, like, they play Steve or Game & Watch, so they're carried or whatever. It's not, like, about the character at this point. It's more of just, like, I don't know how innovative Mia is. I know Mia, Akola, Syrup, they can, like, see the characters that are strong towards the later part of the metagame and be like, okay, I will play this character because this is strong, and I'll figure out how, like, how strong is this character really and bring out, like, the full potential. Obviously, characters like Steve and Game & Watch are very, very strong, and especially Steve has, like, an infinite ceiling with all the technicalities, right? So the things Steve players are doing are really hard, but that's, like, the later part of the metagame. So I really haven't seen the innovative side or the creative side or, like, the beginning of the meta side where it's like, oh, okay, nobody knows what's good. Everyone has these first impressions, but, like, right when Ultimate launched, everyone thought Young Link was good. That character's trash, right? So it's like, obviously, there's some characters that the community gets right, and then there's some characters that where we're like, oh, classic, quick frame data, bad recovery, like, this character's broken. Or sometimes simplistic stuff is very, very strong, right? Sometimes it's the complicated stuff that no one else can do, like Void with Pichu. No, like, no one could execute. Like, it was like execution barrier, and it's like, oh, there's one human being on planet Earth that can execute this right now. And then that was, like, Void's niche, right? And
yeah.
So it's like, so there, I'm very interested to see players, like, year one niches in terms of, like, what are you going to take advantage of in terms of your own skills to propel you forward where the game is the most competitive, but we're in a world, like, year one is such a fun area because it's, we know the least about the game, but it's the most competitive in terms of just, like, actual player base and stuff like that, right? Like, a lot of people are into it. Information's getting spread like wildfire. Like, dude, you get, like, Smash Twitter when the game first launches, like, first month or two, it is insane. Your timeline's, like, filled with things like, oh, is this true? Is this not true? It's like, it's just the age of discovery. And on that note, my sleeper pick, I'm gonna show SoCal some love. I'm going to pick Rockman. I think he's one of the best, like, labbers I've ever seen. And trust me, I've seen lots of labbers. There's a lot of labbers in Smash that impress me. But Rockman is, like, Ultimate has so many different characters. And I don't think Ultimate has, like, a crazy amount of tech, like, outside of Steve. But Rockman still, like, pushes Steve meta and figures out so many different things about Ultimate. It is impressive how much things I see Rockman lap out in a game that doesn't have that much tech is what I'm saying. So it is impressive the amount of stuff Rockman finds. I'm very interested to see how Rockman does in the beginning of the next Smash game if he plays it. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I think that's a great point because there is a huge difference between winning when a game is brand new versus when there's, like, an established meta and hierarchy of how things are played and what things are done. So it's kind of like, I love it because, like, in the beginning of a meta, it feels kind of, it's like kind of dirty. It's like, what are you going to do to win?
Yes.
You know what
it's
I mean?
Little, what it's are, a little what are you gonna sloppy. Do?
It is. Right? Well, that's great. But to be fair too, like, there is, things fall into place pretty quickly. Like, things are found out pretty fast. So you're right. For a lot of these players, like Syrup and stuff, I didn't really see Syrup try to compete in early Ultimate or try to win super early in Ultimate. Same with Zamba until he was more on the radar. So I'm really curious to see how they carry themselves in this new game. And a part of it is it becomes a little easier because as someone who's established as a top player, you have access to even better resources than the general public and maybe even knowledge that's forbidden and hidden until Genesis or until the next big tournament or whatever, right? So it is, I feel like we talk about the next Smash game so much, but it's just because it truly, there's nothing like it. There really isn't. Like, similar vibes were like the new Street Fighter game, like watching new Street Fighter 6 clips in the beginning were so exciting, but, like, people get so tired of stuff so fast, it feels like that. I don't know, it's just tough. So in Smash, especially Ultimate, because there's so many characters, dude, it was just such a I don't even know, I don't even know what to call it. I don't even know what the word is.
It was like a gold rush, all out dude. Brawl, bro. Crazy,
yeah, it was like a gold rush. Yeah, and it's like you gotta. I don't know. Like you lightning kind of has to strike twice for you. Like you got to find the right thing for you, and you got to be able to make it work, and you got to beat everyone else. And it's so crazy. And we got great storylines coming into the new one, but still enjoying current Ultimate, of course. Like we said, watch the tournaments. Gavin's been restreaming, which has been fun. I watch Phil EE. I watch him restream him. I watch Larry. We got my favorite, you know, and Gavin too. Like I said, the guys who changed the channel for me. I really appreciate them and all the hard work they do. They talk up between the matches, turn the volume up, you know, all right, thanks guys. Appreciate it. Do that. That's great. That's my guys right there. So make sure you sub to all them, watch them and all that stuff. They're amazing to watch tournaments with, just their personalities, insight, commentary, all that stuff is very fun. Oh, and the last thing I remembered what I brought up the first time, the trailer, Gavin, come on, tell them about it.
So yesterday, so we've had to have mentioned it on the show before,
but I don't think we have, to be honest with you.
Smash.
Oh, maybe we did.
Smash Remix is like the coolest mod ever, honestly, at this point. It's very well made and very charming. It has a huge roster now, and it just feels right. They put all that extra effort in that recent trailer too, with like the original Smash 64 announcer and like all the different modes and side things, like, and I was like, bro. So at the end of the video they released yesterday, they revealed Lanky Kong. And I was like, okay, I keep admiring this from afar. I can no longer do that. I'm trying this tonight. And I just played Lanky Kong in training mode the entire night. So,
Andy,
you were playing versus computers too. You're advancing the Lanky meta.
Yeah. Level 10 computers, which I think is a new thing. I think they made a level 10.
Nine, yeah, it was 9 before.
It's definitely new, yes. Like, those computers were doing some OD stuff.
Crazy, yeah. SDI and shit.
I like what you're saying, too, about this gap, because, you know, obviously, number one, probably eternally, it will be PM for the best insane trailer, by the way. I don't get the joke, but Gavin was, like, beside
himself. It was a viral video of this guy acting like he was Lanky Kong reacting to the DK rap for the first time.
He
was confused why they were making so much fun of him. Like, that was the video. It was very funny.
That's really and good.
This guy was, I forget his name. I'm sorry. I don't really know his name.
He's a big YouTuber, right?
I just know the video, yeah.
Yeah.
But this guy also.
Joel, what? Chris? Joel Haver, there we go.
Yeah, and he was featured on Smiling Friends recently too. Like, it's kind of crazy.
Haver, yeah. Damn, 2 million wild. Subs on YouTube.
Go. Yeah, so that was a deep cut. That was pretty ridiculous.
Oh, you can taunt while in the handstand thing, looks like.
So, yeah, I had a lot of fun playing last night. I played like 99% Lanky Kong. I tried other stuff. The stages are so charming. The music they added in, like, I'm still
Gavin's
like...
Gavin's a Slippy enjoyer.
Yeah, Slippy is fun, bro. I'm still tinkering with like all the settings, and I want to play online with people, but bro, that was fun. I can't wait to do it again today. I'm not gonna lie.
I think you said it well, and as I was saying, like, PM will probably be the number one, you know, Smash mod of all time forever, just because it was like lightning in a bottle. Like, it really came out at the perfect time before Smash 4 came out, so Brawl heads were looking for a game to play and Melee players wanted to play, and, you know, the whole beef between the two scenes and all that stuff. It's gonna be really tough to ever beat that. But this is like a true love letter to like the N64 and like a very specific era of video games, which to me is such a perfect encapsulation of what makes Smash so beautiful. And it's not just, you know, the characters, like Gavin said, if you haven't seen the roster, I don't want to spoil it for you because it's insane, but their directs are like, I call them a direct, but their reveal trailers, which are basically directs, are like 20 minutes long. And really well made and probably only beaten by official Smash directs in Smash.
That immersion is important, I think. Like, you totally really feel like you're a part of something special when you're watching these things, and it adds to the mystique of this product, even though it's like a mod.
It makes it so real. And I'll keep it a buck. N64 is my least favorite Smash to play in this day and age. I love it, you know, when I was a kid and all that stuff, and it's great. But this is so good. I'm gonna be playing just because the mod is so good. You know what I mean? Like, it's amazing. It's not, and again, it's not just the characters or the stages. They add in things like the ultimate last hit effect is now in this game, to spoil a little bit of this. And you can toggle any of this on and off. Rage is something you can toggle on and off. It's kind of like truly just a love letter to not just N64 in this time period, but like Smash in general. Like, they want everybody, it feels like they want it to be a game for everybody who enjoys every version of Smash. Like, there's a character reveal for you. If you're an audio-only listener, I'm not going to spoil it. But this character who's on screen is made very much in the Melee vein for this character. Like, you could see it already in the moveset, right? Like, just ridiculous. And it's so cool and charming, and the art is good, and it's just really well done. And I don't think any mod is doing it like this one right now. And to be honest, I don't think anyone did prior either. I think PM was brilliant, obviously. But it never lasted as long as, well, obviously it's still going, but I just mean like before it got, you know, shut down. It never reached like this level, I don't think, you know. And they're doing stuff now, and I know there's more mods out there, but this one to me is just, man, it's beautiful. Like, whoever's doing this gets it, is what I would say.
Yeah.
They just create the character so bad, Jesus.
It's like you said, it's either like a product of its time, or they like make it Smash 64-ified. Like, it's very interesting.
Totally. It's amazing, yeah. Very cool. Very cool.
The stages go crazy. Like, this, it has such a good feel. And I mean, like, I haven't played it yet, but just watching Gavin play it, I'm like, man, this looks really nice. Like, all the hit effects spot on, the audio for the newer characters spot on. And as someone, like, I know N64 is not the greatest Nintendo system, but it's my favorite just because of the time in my life where I played Nintendo games. Like, I probably put the most amount of time into like the Nintendo to like Wii era, or an N64 to the Wii era is when I played like the most Nintendo. So 64 was definitely the first time as a kid that I went like super all out into just like grinding N64 games or whatever, right? So it, as someone who really enjoyed the N64, they did an amazing job, man. Just the feel and the look of everything just is amazing.
You owe it to yourself to at least watch the trailers, is what I'll say. Even if you don't touch or play the game, but I think you'd be hard pressed to not at least want to try it out after seeing the trailers and the care, everything about it. That's what happened to us last night, basically. So, yeah. Very cool.
Yeah, honestly, today was a fantastic episode. If anyone is interested in bonus content, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/tweaktalks. We do bonus content. We answer questions. I do VOD review. It's a nice mix of stuff. Next episode will be 200. Thank you so much for all the support. And yeah, I think this was a really nice, well-rounded episode of topics. And yeah, have a good one.